This is an encore presentation of Jefferson State of Mind on KCNR.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
Yes, it does. Good morning, everybody. This is Jefferson State of Mind, a.k.a., to all you leftists out there, the Buzzard's View. We're here broadcasting, not live this morning, this is pre-recorded, at 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, your talk radio from downtown Reading at KCNR Studios. And we are streaming live on KCNR1460.com. That's 1460.com. And I am here with my producer, Christina. How are you, my dear?
Good morning. I'm doing great, as always, getting ready for the holidays.
Are you?
How are you? Are you ready for the holidays? Did you bought all the presents?
Honey, every day's a holiday to me.
Oh.
Every day's a holiday.
I agree, for sure.
That's the way it should be. That's the way life should be, huh?
Without any pressure.
You bet. Anyway, I'm here this morning, excited about this one. I'm here with Laura Hobbs, and Laura is running for supervisor for District 2. And I'm excited to bring this forward because, and I'm going to just sort of say this, I've had a lot of people I've interviewed before, and usually I'll ask them to give me three or four things or a couple of things they want to talk about. Laura sent me a whole list of things about what she wanted to talk about. And the one thing I have to say, Laura, and good morning, by the way, is that what you gave me was everything that had the jurisdiction of a supervisor. It's about the first time I've ever gotten anything where there wasn't a bunch of platitudes. It was really something that pertains to what your job description is. So tell us a little bit about Laura Hobbs.
Sure. I got my PhD in microbiology, but I have been a stay-at-home mom for the last decade or so, and I'm a patriot. I voted for Trump in 2016 and 2020. I plan to vote for him again. I'm very passionate about fair and transparent elections, and that's been my primary motivation in getting involved in politics of recent. And I just feel like I really want to make a change for this country for the better. And at this point, I think the local level is the place to do it. So that's how I got involved.
Now, you talked to me a lot when we talked about transparency. And, you know, I think that that's such a great position. We hear that a lot. You know, we want to be transparent. But I think you really mean it. I want you to sort of to elaborate on some of the points that you wrote to me. And, again, it was impressive for me because to see somebody who understood the job description. I know you've been to a lot of meetings, haven't you?
Yeah, I try to attend as often as I can. I've been analyzing the CVR data, which is an election auditing file, a public record. So every chance I get, I go up before the board and explain what I found in this data. And so I get to overhear a lot of what's going on in the county, and I feel very deeply involved, especially in my district. I want to make a good place for my children to grow up. I want to have representation. I feel there's been kind of a lack of representation in District 2 in the last year or so. And so that's where I stand and why I got involved.
You were talking about, I know that Wynn Carpenter has brought up the forensic audit, and you're also in favor of a forensic audit, I understand.
Yes, very much so. I think we need an outside forensic audit and to look at all the different county departments and also to, with that, to investigate the county fee structures for permits and whatnot. Because from what I understand, that's based on a five-year nexus report. And I don't have all the data yet, but I believe that, you know, they made estimations on the population growth and the real estate growth, value growth, and those may or may not be relevant.
Right.
I think the citizens may be possibly being charged more than they need to be. A lot of people have complained of that, you know, to the Board of Supervisors. They go up before the board and they have 3 minutes and they talk about things that affect them directly, and these county fees are one of the things that is negatively affecting people of this county.
Yeah, that's very true, you know. And I think a lot of it, too, when you look at how top-heavy the salaries are in the county, it's very, very top-heavy. The people that are out there carrying the load, a lot of times are making 25% of what the upper echelon's making, who's delegating the work to the people who are doing all the work, who are making 75% less. I think
exactly.
That's a good point.
And I think if, you know, part of it, too, is the designation of our county as a suburban county instead of a rural county. That enabled the executives to get a much higher salary, and I'm not sure that that was justified. And I have some statistics just to share with you guys. The people per square mile in San Francisco is 34,000 people per square mile. In Sacramento, it's 1,600 people per square mile. And in the suburbs around Sacramento, it's 43 people per square mile. But here in Shasta, we have only 21 people per square mile.
Holy mackerel.
So I'm really not sure that it's justified that we be considered a suburban county. And that's what a full forensic audit would do, is to look at issues such as these and do, you know, a thorough examination as to whether or not the county is, you know, been designated correctly.
Sure.
And how that affects our finances.
Sure. That's a great point. You know, another thing you sent me was protect the citizens of Shasta County from lockdowns and vaccine mandates. We all know a mandate isn't a law.
Yeah.
And I love that because I think that, you know, most of us are sort of waiting for the other foot to drop and waiting for these mandates to come out and these different things for the state doing all the corrupt, horrible things they've been doing to us to come back at us again. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yes, certainly. I do not want any mandates. I don't think the county should be putting any county ordinances that would support a mandate. And I would be very strong and very firm on that. No masking, no mandatory vaccines for any county employees, no mandatory school closures, no locking down and closing down local businesses. We found that a lot of it was based on a lie, and there was real harms to our community, and I will not let that happen again.
Now also, you know, homeless is a problem, and I noticed that you made a point about homeless enforcement, and you said that you would support law enforcement using the success of the city of Anderson as a model. And I couldn't agree with you more, and I haven't really heard this, but you're so right. It is a code enforcement issue. And I remember seeing something on a chat room on one of Free Fire Radio's program, and a person on that chat room who had worked for law enforcement said, if the city of Reading, which I know the jurisdiction of that isn't really something that you have a lot of say over, that the city of Reading, if they only would enforce some of these codes, we could solve a lot of the homeless problem. What say you?
Absolutely. I think we can solve it overnight, just like they did in San Francisco. Gavin Newsom cleared the streets.
That's because China was coming.
Because China was coming, yep. And we could do the very same thing here in just a matter of days, I'm sure. There's already laws on the books, and we need to enforce that. We need to be able to work hand-in-hand with Reading Police Department and give them the support that they need and find out if there are. I mean, it's a hierarchical system, so we need to find out what the current orders are from the chief of police, and see how we can assist them in doing their job of law enforcement. I'm not saying that they're not doing their job, because I think
sure.
the rank and file are just following orders.
Sure.
So I think we need to help them out and assist them in that.
You know, you said you were using Anderson as a model. Give me an example of that.
Well, I spoke to actually the police chief of Anderson briefly, John Pileski, and he's doing a great job. He's putting that as a priority for their city, and he's basically, you know, enforcing loitering laws, enforcing no camping laws, and all you have to do is use the laws currently on the books, and I think that's a great example of success. There's a lot less, you know, the citizens there are really pleased, and when I went to speak with him, I nudged the shoulder of someone else that I was with, and she actually lives down in Anderson, so she was, you know, she was happy to go speak to him and thank him personally for what he's done.
That's cool. Yeah, the, you know, something else you've talked about, and we've talked about this a lot, and that is the U.S. Constitution, and how, you know, I think that the supervisors we have now, at least three of them that I can think of, now understand the fact that the role of government is simply to protect the rights and the freedom of the sovereign. And I don't, a lot of people don't really have that view, but I know that you're always thirsty and you're hungry for not only learning more about the Constitution, but studying the Constitution and the California Constitution. And, oh, by the way, November 7th, they just brought out a new one. So now we have a new California Constitution. I've been going through that to make sure that all the stuff that we're teaching in these classes is correct, because when you have a document that's been changed 527 times, I mean, you know, kind of tough to keep up. But anyway, I want you to elaborate a little bit on that. I think that's a great point, because you're somebody speaking about the Constitution who actually knows what's in it. Go ahead.
Well, the California Constitution has one of the strongest plenary rights for the counties, which means that the counties get to decide their how they want to conduct, what laws they want, and the order and all the rules for that county. They have jurisdiction. They have strong jurisdiction compared to other states where the counties have less freedom and
very
less sovereignty, really. So I think that that's a good thing, and I don't believe that has been amended out of it. I think we still have those rights and protections of the California Constitution, but our strongest suit is going to be at the local level and asserting our constitutional rights based on not just the California Constitution, but also the U.S. Constitution.
100%. Yeah. The Second Amendment is something I know is near and dear to you, and I think that, you know, one of the things that people don't really understand, that that's an inalienable right. It's not just a second class right. So go ahead and elaborate on your thoughts on that.
Absolutely. I think we really need to protect that and also, you know, educate people on it so that they understand this is a key to our freedom. This is the reason why we have remained free for as long as we have, is because any country that wants to invade the U.S. knows that each household, you know, owns arms and has the ability to protect themselves. And I feel like other countries where they don't have the ability to keep and bear arms, they don't have as many freedoms as we do. They don't have a lot of times the freedom of speech and all these other freedoms.
No way to protect them anyway.
Yeah. Well, they have no way to protect them, so they were taken away.
Right. And it's just, you know, when you look at a lot of people have looked at the Second Amendment resolution that was passed by the Board of Supervisors. And, yeah, it is something that's more of a statement. But by the same token, I think that there could be a little more, just in my opinion, I think there could be a little more, maybe pressure's the wrong word, but a little more paying attention to what the sheriff is doing when it comes to the Second Amendment and really our right to bear arms. I think that, you know, and that's a whole other issue that I won't get into right now, but I think that you're absolutely right. I mean, if we don't have the Second Amendment, nothing else gets protected. You've talked about reducing county regulations and fees and to stimulate the growth, and I think that Chris Kellstrom has brought up a lot of those kinds of things, and he's been instrumental in going into these departments and saying, hey, these people are our customers. We're their employees. It's not up to us to dictate to them. Can you elaborate on what your thoughts are on that?
Absolutely. I think that people have lost sight of the fact that the county officials are public servants, and their job is to serve the people, and they're serving at the will of the people instead of the other way around. Sometimes you have bureaucrats who just get empowered by, you know, their authority, and they lose sight of the fact that they're actually working for the people. And that's why my campaign slogan is, "We the People Taking Our Government Back." I feel like each county officer should have the awareness that they are public servants, and that they are serving us so that, you know, we can maintain our whatever we're asking them to do is basically us giving them permission to help us and not the other way around.
100%. You know, you talked about the, again, back to the county regulations. I think that when you have to wait so long for a permit and you have a situation where some of the fees and all the different fees that are thrown in these businesses to start, it really does stop growth. Is there any particular plan you have or something where you you can pinpoint where you would really go on that to try to stop that? Maybe the audit, but anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, well, the audit, reviewing the Nexus reports, and
that's perfect, yeah.
And then also, for instance, with the Zog fire, mm-hmm. A lot of people had their property destroyed and they had to rebuild, and that requires getting these really expensive permits from the city, mm-hmm. Or from the county, rather. And so that's one area where we could definitely help people in District 2 who have been harmed and that need to have these fees either reduced or completely gotten rid of in their case.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, and you know, it's sort of like, I mean, the distribution of that money, there's a lot of people who have a question on that. I mean, how that money was distributed. I mean, everybody thinks the Child Legacy Center is a good endeavor, but to get, what, 15, 20% of that money is pretty insane. What say you about that?
I was shocked to find that the citizens of Igo Ono only got this $200,000 settlement to rebuild a play structure, whereas the Children's Legacy Fund got $7.8 million.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just seems so off kilter to have that. I mean, I really would like to see those funds be distributed to the citizens that were harmed in Igo Ono and not to an NGO. And there was also problems with the fact that Stephanie Bridget, the DA who distributed those funds, she used county funds for litigating the case. The county paid for the lawsuit, but then when the funds were
distributed,
yeah, then she didn't consult the county at all in that, and she's actually a board member of the Children's Legacy Fund.
Unbelievable.
So
no connection there, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, and I think that really makes sense, and I like the idea you brought up, you know, the Igo Ono area and all that, which is in your district, I believe, yes?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I think that, you know, one of the things that where I think the candidate of District 2 is going to be a little different this time, and that is you're really going to have to get in the trenches with these folks. There's a lot of issues out there. I mean, there's road issues, there's water issues, and I know you're very, very strong on water rights and making sure that our water rights here in Shasta are protected. I'd like you to elaborate a little more on that.
Yeah. Well, I feel that, you know, in a county that has so much water resources, and there's no reason why anyone within this county should go without. And I was just astonished to learn that the people of off Kingston Road had apparently, you know, their water reserves were going low. And what the city water board or the county water board did was, instead of providing them more water, they sold off the remaining water rights. What happened was, like, for instance, you know, my sister's friend, they had a house they were planning on renting out for a whole year. They had already signed a lease and a contract, and their renters had to find somewhere else to live at the last minute, and they lost that income for the whole year because that the only other option was to have water bust in. And they tried in that neighborhood to drill more, you know, deeper wells. And there was foundational rock that prevented them from getting, you know, the depth that they needed. And I don't think that should happen to anyone in a county like ours.
Yeah, you know, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, getting back to the some of the county issues, and you talking about the jurisdiction of the county, and when the Board of Supervisors got rid of the Dominion machine, I guess it goes without saying you were probably a proponent of them getting rid of the machines, right?
Very much so.
Very much so. And I know you've led the charge, and I don't really think it's that much of a secret. You've been very active. I haven't seen all the opponents in District 2 really be at the meetings, and maybe to their, some of them work, maybe. I mean, and I get that. But I think that the one thing that, that I think we need to have with everybody that runs is A, transparency, and B, understanding exactly what the jurisdiction is going to be in your particular job. What's your job description? It's not about, frankly, you have nothing you can do with education. It's not your jurisdiction. You really don't have anything you can do as far as what's going on with the monetary system or anything like that. So I think that what's refreshing to me is when I talk to a candidate, and there are a few out there. Chris Kellstrom was one. Chris Kellstrom was a candidate that I really enjoyed interviewing because of the fact that Chris would go ahead and he'd cut right to the chase. This is what I'm doing. This is what I'm going to do. Here's the problem. This is my idea for the solution. Here's the problem. This is my idea of the solution. I think we're all tired of platitudes.
Yeah.
So when we look at something like AB 969 and what the state is doing to us, I mean, AB 969 not only was an egregious law, since we already had something we were going to have in place for voting that was approved at the time, but they made this law to where it was an emergency to put in. It was an emergency because, and here's what the ruling was on that. You probably know this, but the folks may not. They were concerned about public health, go figure, public unrest. Well, during an election, there are going to be people who aren't going to be happy, and get this, public safety. And I know Kathy Darling Allen, I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about her or not, but Kathy Darling Allen is somebody who kept complaining about how she felt like her life was threatened and, you know, the sky was falling and everything else. And most of the time, the reports I heard is she was on the root end of things and not really on the wanting to get along end of things. Do you have any thoughts that you want to share with that?
Absolutely. Yeah, I listened to the CEER Summit, the Center for Election Innovation and Research.
Was that Soros' gig?
Yeah. Funded by the Zuckerbergs. They had a summit in Washington, D.C.
Right.
In the early part of 2023. And that was the theme of their summit was Secretary of States and ROVs from all across the country claiming to be injured and harmed by citizens who wanted fairness and transparency. So if indeed Kathy Allen was harassed, harmed, or injured, she needs to provide the supporting evidence of that, because I believe that is propaganda from the top down. It's not just her office that's claiming that. It's all across the country.
I think that's true, and I know that I did watch portions of that as much as I could stomach.
Yeah.
And it was really something to where, you know, I'm just thinking, give me a break here. I mean, there isn't anybody that's threatening harm. If anybody was yelling at anybody, it was her at people, and I know that for a fact.
And we've got a video of her yelling at somebody at this most recent election as well. Lori Bridgefort was just trying to vote, and she lost her temper with her. The ROV lost her temper with Lori Bridgefort, the other way around.
Right.
So.
Well, we've got about a minute left here in this particular segment, and can we just kind of go off and get that done? Great. Okay, we're going to go for a break here. We'll be back with Laura Hobbs, running for supervisor for District 2 in Shasta County, California, and time has come for 51. What do you think, Christina? Let's get it done, huh?
Sing their song. They practiced all Ring in the new year at Redding Garden of Lights with Turtle Bay's New Year's Eve event featuring over 1 million lights, live music by Hook, a virtual screen ball drop, glowing swings, and much more. Mosaic food and beverages available for purchase. This all-age special ticketed event is from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. New Year's Eve at Redding Garden of Lights. Sunday, December 31st, 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. All ages. Tickets at turtlebay.org.
Hi friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew, bringing up this month's Cigar of the Humidor, Casa 1910. If you've been curious, perhaps even tempted, to try a Mexican puro, this is the stick to get. An absolute pleasure to smoke, and honestly, one of my all-time top tens. The Casa 1910. Get yours today, Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
The property insurance crisis in California is starting to affect the business insurance property also. 200 to 300% rate increases in business property rates or not writing business insurance at all are becoming the norm. At Siskiyou Insurance, we have over 100 years experience in writing business insurance in the North State. We can help. We live here and care about our community and want to make sure that you keep your business with a local agent that knows our town and supports it every day. And we'll get you the best deal we can. Call Curtis Byron at Siskiyou Insurance Services, 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345. Siskiyou Insurance, 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345. This is an encore presentation of Jefferson State of Mind on KCNR.
Yeah, staying alive. That's what we're doing here in Shasta County. You know, Christina, you have a lot more rhythm than Wynn does. You know, whenever Wynn dances, we ask him not to.
I'm just young.
Yeah, you're just young. Well, we are staying alive, and we are alive, and we aren't really live. We're a recording, but we're on with Laura Hobbs, who's running for District 2 Supervisor of Shasta County, and she will be live this coming Sunday, the 17th of December at 10 o'clock with Mark and Linda Kent on Sovereign Minds, and you can ask her questions at that time, and I'm sure she's looking forward to that,
yep.
Which is something that, we need a little bit more of that transparency. And we were talking about Kathy Darling-Allen, we were talking about an ROV office. That really does seem to be a problem. There's just so many crazy things that have happened. I mean, you know, the Kevin Cry recall that's going on. I mean, what was it, like 17 or 18 people where there was only like 18 taken off out of, what, 4,000, 5,000 people? I mean, isn't it normally 20 or 30%? What say you?
Exactly. That was a huge statistical abnormality, and we need to investigate that. The state average is 25%, and
yeah.
Anything, I believe our percentage was less than one. So
yeah, it's crazy.
It's unheard of. So maybe it's legit, but we have a right to know and to look into it and be able to see whether or not those signatures were valid.
You know, you have been so stellar on this fight, for our liberty and our vote. Do you think that being a board of supervisor is going to inhibit a lot of the hard work you've done and the folks that you've been working with? Do you think that's going to inhibit anything, or do you think that you still have the time to really wear that hat too? What do you think?
I think I'll still have the time to wear that hat because that's a passion of mine. That's, you know, some people like crocheting or knitting, like Kathy Allen, for instance. My passion is election fairness and transparency. So, yeah, I'll be doing that for sure, indefinitely, until things get all fixed, which, you know, if overnight things are fixed and fair and transparent, then I'll let it go and move on to something else. But I think I can serve everyone well as the supervisor and also continue my election integrity work.
So what do you think about all the state overreach, and what would you suggest the Board of Supervisors, their stand be when it comes to the overreach, AB 969? Every time we turn around, the Fountain Wind Project, every time we turn around, they're passing a law taking away what constitutionally was protected during the time we were doing it and just stopping it immediately. What do you think our procedure should be?
Well, absolutely, we need to start doing things like the Charter County to assert our rights, creating
more
county ordinances.
Where do you think that helps, the Charter County? What specifically do you think that's going to do for us?
Well, I believe that the people should be able to vote on it, and I think that we can set forth how we want our elections to be conducted. And so that way, and specifically, you know, that we don't want drop box, that we want to do one-day elections, we want to have voter ID, and we can set forth this as part of our county charter so that if any of these items are not followed, it would be a violation of our local county laws.
Yeah, you know, and you begin to wonder what kind of teeth they have. I mean, when the Secretary of State is saying, well, you know what, we're going to pass this AB 969, it's an emergency, it's public health, it's public safety, it's public unrest, we need to do it right away. Well, what's stopping them from passing this stuff, and at what point should we as a county, and were you as a supervisor, and where you would hope that the people on the board with you, at what point do you just say, you know what, we aren't going to submit to tyranny anymore, take a hike?
Exactly. We will not comply, and I would take that to heart, and I feel like if there's going to be a lawsuit, it's great if we can initiate it, but even better yet, if they initiate it against us, then the lawyer fees are on them. I think we should be able to do what we want and need to do, and I believe the law supports that for us as a county to determine how we conduct our elections. And if they want to disagree, then let them take us to court instead of the other way around. But certainly a temporary injunction would be a good thing for us to pursue. I think there's a lot of promise and hope in that, and I believe we are in the right. I don't think there's a lot of things that they did wrong with the AB passing of AB 969, including what you mentioned, which is the false urgency clause. And I think we have a good case. I'm not an elections, elections lawyer, but there are plenty of experts out there that can assist us.
It certainly would be within the justiciability of the court. I mean, everything that the state is doing is adversarial. We have three examples, with the Fountain Wind Project, with the new position and change of the law when we have a recall with the supervisor. And, of course, with AB 969, it was okay to do, constitutional to do, and then all of a sudden we can't do it. So we've got to switch back. But the other thing I wanted to ask you about is, and this is something that really kind of is a pet peeve of a lot of people, that is, you know, we're always told that we can comment, and we have the right to comment on closed session items, but you don't know what the items are because they're closed session. So what's your thought process, and where do you draw the line with closed session?
I'm not a fan of closed session. I think it should be all open session and very, very rare exceptions. Because, like you said, when you look at the description of closed session, it's so vague that you can hardly even know how you would feel one way or the other because you don't know what they're even going to be talking about. And that's not transparency. I believe in transparency and governance in all areas. And as a board of supervisor, I would definitely resist moving things to closed session, or even, you know, I think there's probably very, very rare cases where that might be necessary, but for the most part, everything should be open session.
So just, you know, and I don't think there's, I'm probably going to bring up the obvious here, but that's just, I know for myself, a lot of times when you're listening to a radio program like that, you might be doing gardening or something, you're not going to get everything, but I think that the important thing here is to understand that you are not for having the machines. You're for paper ballots, you're for hand count, and you're for same-day voting.
Probably
voter ID, I would imagine.
Voter ID, chain of custody, that's one thing that I found as an election observer in this most recent election, is there was some serious violations of the chain of custody that happened in what mm-hmm. they call the blue room, and they call it the bat cave. And I think they did a fairly good job of keeping the ballots in a locked cage prior to that point and having chain of custody. But when they got moved up to the blue room in the bat cave, they were no longer in a locked cage. They were just sitting in open air. And there was no accounting for the numbers or signatures signing off on the ballots.
Now, also, you know, a lot of people, we have an election coming. You obviously are Donald Trump's your guy.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that he's probably everybody's, you know, the majority of people's guy. He's a populist, and he's a very popular president. And I don't. Anyone who says otherwise, I think, is deceiving themselves.
Now, getting back to what was the thing when you were looking at this, and I know that I'm assuming that you really don't want to do this as a career.
No.
Okay. And so, what do you think about the term limit situation that we have in the county? If that going on the ballot, term limits for supervisors.
I would support that, definitely. And I would hope that more people would kind of raise to the occasion and go, you know, throw their name in the hat and become a candidate for some of these positions. I think if we have local people that have concerns and they have that are invested and seeing things go well for our county and for our country, I think those are the best people to serve, honestly. So I have no ambitions for becoming a state assembly person or a U.S. senator or anything like that. I want to stay local. And definitely, I think there's a lot of qualified people out there that should step up to the plate and do what I'm doing.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think that all of us... you know, all of us in one way, shape, or form, I think every person wants what's best for their kids and what's best for their, you know, what's best in providing for their family. Kind of unfortunately, now we have to have a two-family income because of the way things are going. I love the idea of you saying to create business and bringing down those fees, bringing down all this rigmarole, the red tape, everything that we have to go through to get something done. And I know that, again, Chris Kallstrom has had some real wins in that. He's had some things. And usually it's just a couple of examples, you know, that you can use. But, I mean, you know, your particular area in District 2, there's a lot of repair that needs to go on there and a lot of things that need to happen there. In your district, and just only in your district, what do you think is the most pressing need right now as far as in District 2?
That's a good question. I think that there's issues along the 273. You know, I haven't talked to a lot of my constituents yet on this. This is just my personal observations. But there is a lot of transient people along that highway, sometimes even entering into traffic in dangerous situations. Mm-hmm. And they have this... maybe you know the history on this, but they have blocked off one lane going under the railroad passing as you leave downtown heading south. And people are using that lane as a pedestrian pathway.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like it's not safe. It's not not a good thing for the transients, and it's not a good thing for the drivers either to have to always worry whether or not they're going to be hitting a pedestrian as they drive through there. And I have noticed that and I'm not sure, I don't know if I should say this or not, but it does seem like there might be some streetwalkers in that area. You know, people.
Oh, you mean prostitutes?
Yeah. Exactly. So, again, it comes down to city and county-wide ordinances that are already in place that need to be enforced.
Yeah.
And that's an area that I think could be improved upon.
Yeah, and the other thing, it's so true. I mean, with all the crime, all the stuff that goes on down there, there is, because I lived near that, right off of 273, so I noticed a lot of that sort of stuff. But I've also noticed a more law enforcement being engaged there. I think that when it comes to water and it comes to just making things a little safer, we've been blessed to, probably should knock on wood, but we've been blessed so far this year without seeing a major fire. Okay, mm-hmm. I hope I'm not jinxing this. But a good thing I'm not superstitious. Anyway, so the thing is that as we look at all that now, we have to understand that the people up in, especially in your district, and I think a lot of supervisors don't really grasp this, but, you're going to have 20% of the vote on everything, mm-hmm. but you do represent a district. And I think that in a lot of cases, it's sort of like, what's happening with Kevin Cry. Here he's being recalled. And I think Kevin Cry's done a good job. There's probably people in District 5 that have thought that, people in District 4 and 3 that have thought that. Mm-hmm. But really all that matters is District 1. So what do you think, are you going to be actively doing some things to where you're in the trenches with folks? Because I think that's something we're really missing. And Kevin Cry did that. I mean, he knocked on all the doors. But do you think that's something that we're missing here as far as campaigning? With some people, when you look at that, without them doing that and getting involved with the folks they're going to be running to represent, they're more of an elitist.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've been reaching out to the outskirts, the people in Igoono and French Gulch, all those areas by phone, because, some of those properties are not easily accessible to people who want to campaign or canvas. And so I've gotten to talk to some of the community that way, and that's been very valuable. I'm also hosting town halls so that people can come to me. I have a number of those listed on my website. You can check out votelaurahobbs.com.
Anything in particular coming up in the future?
Well, there's one. The next one will be January 4th, and that one is actually not a town hall. That one is going to be a debate.
Oh.
But then have town halls after that will be January 17th, February 1st, and February 24th.
And you have a website.
Yes, those are all listed on my website, which is www.votelaurahobbs.com. And my name is spelled LaurahHobbs.
Very good. Okay, so on the 17th, where's that one going to be held?
That will be held at the Reading Public Library in the community room.
January?
And, yep, those will all be at the same location.
Okay.
So January 17th, February 1st, and February 24th, rather.
Okay. Now, the situation now, I believe that there's 4 people running for District 2. Mm-hmm. And, what we do here is we invite every candidate in. If they come, that's fine. If they don't, that's fine. But we always want to make that, that offer, and we will. I think that the idea of a candidate really being in their area, where you can, get down to that nit-grit problem, and I think that's really something that's effective. The other thing I'd like to ask you about is if, in fact, there's one thing you could change that we're doing at the county level right now, and you could change it, what would be Laura Hobbs' position there? Well, what would you change? What would be the thing you would really kind of go after?
Well, the elections is where I would want to absolutely make the most change and the most immediate and lasting change. Mm-hmm. And other areas just involve, you know, what we talked about, reducing the fees, things that make it easier for people this county to thrive and to continue to grow their businesses and improve upon their houses and do all the good things that they want to do.
Yeah. You mean liberty?
Liberty, yep.
So, you know, the other thing I want to ask you about is Health and Human Services. That has been, that's half, over half of our budget, our discretionary budget. Our discretionary budget. And it's half of that. Mm-hmm. You know, I did a little diving into that. I was appalled by seeing how top-heavy it was in the salaries. And I know that's just part of it, but from what I understand, there are some programs there that they could, that actually aren't being used, but being funded. And there's really no reporting on these, and a lot of them help the mentally ill or the homeless. Would you create anything like some way to have some kind of mandatory report on these different things that nobody's talking about? Where'd this grant money go? Where did this go? What are you doing on this?
Mm-hmm, exactly. I attended the budgetary hearings this last year in June, I believe, and I think we need to do a much better accounting of where the money is spent. I want to see, you know, before I approve a budget, I would want to see line item of where the money is going and how it was spent the previous year, and line by line, and no rubber stamping of just broad generalizations, because I looked at some of that, and maybe the board of supervisors themselves had more detail than the public did, but from the public's perspective, there was not enough information to just go ahead and just send the money out. And I would ask difficult questions, like, you know, I believe Kevin Cry did a good job during that time. That's one of his strengths, is he's not afraid to ask the hard questions when it comes to budgets and spending money. Whereas other people on the board that claim to be fiscally conservative, they don't ask the questions that they should be asking to really represent their constituents well.
Yeah, I think the thing is that the idea of when you have that much of your budget, I know I was in business for 45 years, and in looking at, you know, at that, you never wanted to have all or half a lot or half of your business go to one particular customer, because if that mm-hmm. customer, I mean, just ask my friend Mike Lindell. I mean, you know, he lost Walmart. And it, you know, it's all his distribution. Mm-hmm. So when you look at this, when you have half of your budget tied up in one particular area, I mean, to me, that just, how would we go about changing that? Or how would we go about really fixing that? Maybe seeing if the programs are working and being able to eliminate them. And do we have jurisdiction to do that?
Yeah, I believe we do have jurisdiction, absolutely. And I believe that one of the good ways to try to balance that out would be to look at the executive salaries and look at the entry-level salaries. And the people who are actually providing the services are generally more at the entry level. So if we could balance that as well, so that some of that executive salary gets reduced and we perhaps hire more people to provide the basic services at the entry level, it would be a benefit to the community, because you'd have more services rendered and less expenditure of funds.
Yeah, that's a good point. We've got about 5 minutes here. And what I'd like you to do is just sort of take some of that time and really, why would I vote for Laura Hobbs?
All right. Well, I guess because I'm not part of the political elite. I'm just a regular citizen. I'm trying to do what's best for my country and for my family and for the future of my children. I can't be bought or sold, because I'm doing this from my heart. It's a passion to bring the liberties and the freedoms that I think my children should have and all citizens of Shasta should have. And I'm a fighter. I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to be easily manipulated. I think sometimes I love our board majority, and they're doing an awesome job, but I feel like sometimes they don't really realize the authority that they have on a lot of topics. I know Tim Garman, when we were first talking about getting rid of the machines, he was like, well, we're not allowed to. That's against state law to get rid of the machines. And this was prior to AB 969. So a lot of times they're told things by people that just aren't true, whereas and they're made to be afraid that either someone will come and sue them or that it's not allowed, and they're just kind of, yeah, they don't realize their authority. And I think what I would do differently is definitely research things, reach out to the experts on the issues, and that's one of the things my background, getting my PhD and doing research in science, I'm not afraid to look into finding the details and getting the receipts for things. So that's why you should vote for me. So please vote for Laura Hobbs at March 5th. It's coming up soon.
Vote
in person. Vote on Election Day.
Yeah. So, and again, they'll be able to find out where you're going to be and talking to the people. And I know a lot of this is going to be, you know, you getting in the car or, you know, and you're going out somewhere in the hinterlands and talk to those folks. But I think it's really important. I think that what's been brought to life, and, you know, that's been the three guys on the Board of Supervisors that have been out there doing a stellar job and standing up and saying, you know, this thing with the Zog Fire and all these different issues we have, the water issues we have up in District 2, the issues we have with the roads. I mean, how do you get out of there? You know, there's a lot of things to really dive into. So we have 2 minutes left. So bring us home on whatever your thoughts are.
All right. Well, I just want to encourage people. You know, I think that, Terry, what you do really well is you activate people to get out and go to their Board of Supervisors meetings and express their concerns, and I think that's where we can affect real change, is all of us getting up and doing something and speaking up and getting involved politically. So, yeah, that's all I got.
Yeah. You know, well, I think that as we go on and we do, we're going to do another one of these. By the way, I'm thinking about doing a podcast on Mountaintop Media, to where we have all the candidates in and we have maybe kind of like a roundtable. We'll see how that works out. That might be kind of fun. But we're looking at that since I believe that District 2 has the most candidates with 4. I think there's 3. In District 3, and I think in 4, there is just 2, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do is probably take it district by district. So with that, Laura, thank you for being coming on today, but I know this isn't comfortable for you. I know this isn't your comfort zone, but I respect the courage that you have in wanting to run in something that I know isn't really your forte, but it's really the heart. It's really the heart of getting to our liberty and making sure that's passed on to our children.
Thank you, Terry. Appreciate the opportunity.
You bet. Well, Christina, time has come for 51. Let's get it done. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas.
Hey, CA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? It's not our bill. We had no say. You don't serve us. You serve LA. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind. Us, you have no clue, and still you're telling us what to do. We don't know you or what you face. It's time to start a brand new state. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind. Jefferson state of mind. Carved from lessons we all learned through time. And do my state, I will always be true. She's gonna shine in the red, white, and blue.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR, Shasta Red.